The Reserve Bank, has the minutes from the last meeting have come out? What are they saying?
They have. Well, basically, they've really wound back their weasel words and or their bureaucraties, and they are certainly not talking about lifting interest rates anytime soon. So the meeting before last, it was all about having a sizable discussion about whether we should lift rates. And this time it's all about the effect of slowing housing finance and slowing retail sales. And, oh, we're a bit confused because unemployment only rose by 19,000 last month. We were hoping for a bit more. But, with the world's harsh interest rates apart from New Zealand, they've basically said in pretty clear terms that there won't be a rate rise in the next few months. So the markets have heaved a big sigh of relief, and the stock market was down sort of 30 points in the morning. It's finished up 50. And, basically...
Is there any risk in saying that also the society will sort of heave a bit of a sigh of relief and complacency will get back in? Or they are so reliant and absolutely certain that things like rising fuel prices and the offshoot of that of rising costs of groceries, et cetera, is going to be the dampener?
I think because consumer confidence has plummeted, I think that the people are worried that the Reserve's gone too far. Hmm. And that people just can't afford the petrol and the rising interest rates. That it's better. They've been administering monetary policy with a blunt axe. Mm. I think it's fair to say. I mean, these petrol price increases are adding about a quarter of a percentage point in each quarter, and it'll probably be close to a whole percentage point by the end of the year if it keeps up above 140 a barrel. So. I think basically the stock market, I mean, we had a bit of a recovery in May and we touched 6,000 and it's fallen another 10%. So a bit of a dead cat bounce that one, 15%. And so people are going to see their superannuation statements after July 1, which are going to show substantial negative returns. That's going to depress them because a lot of people go out there and spend because they've got a bit of super sitting there one day. And this will be the first year of negative returns for a while. Interest rates going up, petrol. I think the one thing we haven't seen is the substantial job cuts. But even today's news, Qantas cutting flights, the big zinc mine in Broken Hills cut 37% of their workforce today. The big plumbing group company Crane has just cut 90 jobs today. So we are starting to see a few little restructurings and corporate problems and job cuts coming through.
How far does that go?
I think you'll probably see unemployment with a six in front of it by the end of the year. And let's be honest, that's what the Reserve Bank wants. We have been going too far, and we are having to import record amounts of offshore labour. So I think a little bit of a loosening in jobs demand is just the natural thing that will happen, and the Reserve Bank's looking for it. So if we can choose. We can either have crazy full employment with massive job shortages, or we can have interest rates going up and up and up and up until that valve is released.
Is there a chance that we could see interest rates come down?
Well, I must admit, I think that they're ridiculously high and should be about 2 percentage points lower because we've got this massive...
But you've always fought with them about that. So what do you think will happen?
Why would you cause us to have a record high currency? And, I mean, poor old Foster's, we all have a tipple. They've lost about $5 billion on their US wine play, on their overall wine play. And the biggest single hit's been the currency going through the roof. All the car manufacturers trying to export with a record high currency, they're getting slaughtered. So a lot of the base of the economy and manufacturing, a lot of Melbourne-based companies are really suffering because of this iron ore and coal boom, which is largely generating record profits for, as I've said before in your program, about 80% of our resource projects are foreign-owned. So that money sort of comes in and then government clips the ticket for 30%. So the government has a boom.
But nobody else does.
If you own shares in BHP and Rio Tinto, look, you're doing okay. But a lot of other people who own shares and everything else, from all the financial engineers which have been tumbling, and the Babcocks and the banks which are off 30-40%, and the overall market which is now back to being down by more than 20-22% from the peak last November. It's a lot of pain.
But isn't the dollar too also because the American economy is in such disarray? I mean, are they using the R word yet?
Oh, well, unofficially. It hasn't officially come around, but there was a lovely quote from Warren Buffett the other week where he said, us Americans, we can handle a bit of mismanagement. Referring to George Bush's 8 years. The US dollar's been absolutely crucified against everyone, and because the majority of trade is still done in the US dollar, it's the sort of the reserve currency of the world that's hitting us and it's hitting everyone else. But we've sort of zoomed higher than most because of the whole terms of trade boom. But because now the US Federal Reserve's talking about jacking up official interest rates, and so are the Europeans, and there's all this tough talk about inflation, they must have been copying the Australian Reserve Bank, because they're all suddenly getting tough on inflation, and that's causing people to think the US dollar might recover a bit. So hopefully our dollar can get back to mid-80s or something like that, and all the extreme pain for non-resource exporters can be relieved. The guy had an email from Babcock and Brown today saying, you know, you've been grossly irresponsible with your inaccurate and unduly alarming comment, blah, blah, blah.
Again.
And in response to, quote, impending Babcock and Brown collapse, or share price collapse at least, not overall collapse, you know, blah, blah, you have no proof to support such an alarmist statement. And then a few little comments I quite like. The market capitalization clause in the corporate debt facility does not constitute a default or breach of covenant. And assets at both the Babcock and Brown Limited level and across the group of independently listed or wholesale funds substantially exceed individual entity borrowings.
Do you understand it?
Well, they're basically saying we can pay our debts.
Right. Well, why don't they just say it like that?
Mate, you're wrong. We can pay our debts.
Well, see, I would have appreciated that more. Wouldn't you?
I would. Yeah, maybe the share price would go up too.
Yeah, maybe it would. 11 to 6, Stephen Mayne with me. Just going to the Babcock. I've been troubling with this all week. Babcock and Brown, you've called it the implosion, which is probably why they hate you. What's the actual effect of what's happened to them on local people, on people in Melbourne and particular developments here? Anything?
Well, they say not. I mean, for instance, they are the financier and the main organiser of the Royal Children's Hospital redevelopment, where they've, you know, had to borrow $1.4 billion. Mm-hmm. It's actually close to a $1 billion project. And they've got all sorts of construction companies and catering companies and health companies involved in the consortium. They were just the arrangers. And it's managed out of actually a London listed vehicle, so it's not actually directly controlled by Babcock and Brown. And their comment is, look, you know, everything's fine. We've got a couple of issues here with our debts in our power fund, but, you know, you shouldn't talk about, oh, does this mean the St Kilda Triangle development won't go ahead? Because, I mean, they are, again, the financier to the St Kilda Triangle. Sitter Properties, their joint venture partner, was today quoted in the Financial Review saying everything's fine. So everyone's been putting out statements saying everything is fine. I mean, the headstock, Babcock and Brown itself, has recovered 11% today, up to $5.85. So I think they need to raise probably close to half a billion to $1 billion of new capital. Yet they're only worth, you know, they're worth less than $2 billion now. They've plunged from, you know, $12 billion to $2 billion. So it's been an astonishing collapse. And seeing a share fall by 50% in a week, as we saw last week, is just investor confidence evaporating. And today's little bounce was actually quite interesting because it was caused by the fact that fellow teetering financial engineer, Allco Finance Group, which has plunged from, they were going to buy Qantas, remember, they've plunged from, you know, $13 to 30 cents. And they today have sold their largely US wind farms, including, I think, one of the world's biggest wind farms in California, for US$325 million, which was a very big price. And so the Allco Finance Group share price today has almost doubled. It's gone from, you know, 30 to 55. And the Babcock price has bounced because the whole of Babcock's financial strength at the parent company level is relying on the fact that they're trying to sell a couple of $1 billion worth of wind farms in Europe.
Oh, I see. And, so they're thinking the precedent's been set.
Yeah, and the analysts are saying, predicting they'll make between $300 million and $550 million net profit after tax from that. And everyone sort of said, well, you know, you've been talking up all this stuff all this time and you haven't really delivered. But boy, the Allco boys have got $325 million US for their wind farms. Maybe you can do it. And I think that they, you know, they're really dependent on this deal. I mean, it's a huge thing for them. If they can pull it off, then maybe they can get out of it. But the problem with the Babcock story is that they are basically, investment banks are basically capitalized reputation. And because more than $5 billion has been blown across all the different funds, I mean, I've invested in all 10 of them. So I've lost my shirt on a few of them. And people won't sort of give them any more money. So if you're a bank which hasn't got a record of delivering for your customers, or if you're a fund manager that underperforms, funds management is a winner-takes-all industry where everyone puts their money with the winner. And if you suddenly are one of the biggest losers in terms of what you deliver, then you won't be able to do it. So the big question now with Babcock is I don't think they can raise a lot more money. So it becomes a workout situation where they've got, well, $80 billion of assets and more than $50 billion of debt around the world. all sorts of amazing projects from schools in New South Wales. The Long Bay Jail in Sydney, they built the $130 million hospital there. They did our showgrounds redevelopment. They've got, they own vast numbers of retirement villages around the place. They own the old gas-fired power station at Newport in Melbourne in the western suburbs, and the one in Gippsland. So it's a huge empire that they have, from coal mines to ports to power stations.
So if worst comes to worst and they had to divest themselves of all of that asset, then they could affect – I mean, it seems that they could – I know you're saying it's about the reputation, but they could, in fact, kind of trade themselves out of
that. Well, they could get out of it, and the investors in the individual funds might get out of it. So, I mean, as I said, I'm an investor in all of them, and some of them I might get my money back, and others I'll lose 60-70%. But I think their ability to list new funds is gone. And the key issue that people are most upset about, and I raised this with them at their AGM a couple of weeks ago in Sydney, is that all these funds have these 25-year management contracts in which they can never be sacked. So it's like appointing a CEO on a 25-year contract and saying that even if you remove them, you have to keep paying them for 25 years. So a lot of these funds have performed very badly. And ordinarily in capitalism, investors would sack the board. But they have these ridiculous contracts which still have never been fully disclosed. They have bad disclosure, bad governance, long-term locked-in contracts, and the market's gone on a bit of a capital strike with them because they haven't performed, and then the market can't fix it because they've got all these poison pills and structures in there. So I think they might sell a few assets for big prices, but it's not a good time to be selling off assets. I mean, they might do right from their wind farms, but you know, how are they going to go with everything else? So, I mean, they've sent me a pretty, stop talking us down, stop being irresponsible. So,
and you've listened to that very, very closely, obviously.
Their shares are up 11% today.
And I'm
looking forward to them going from $5.85 back to $34, which is what they peaked at last year.